Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hello and welcome. We are the Andy and the Uncles. I'm Uncle Sammy.
And I'm your Uncle Dave. And remember, not only can you hear us on the podcast, you can also watch us on YouTube.
Yo.
Yes, YouTube. Just search for Hairy Bikers, Agony Uncles, and there we'll be. We'll pop up.
Yes, in on a tube, which is always good.
Where are you, Kingy? You're very echoey.
I can't help it. I'm in a big room in Rome.
Oh, yes, you've gone to Rome. Not that you've had enough holidays.
No, I haven't. Nobody can ever have enough holidays, dude.
It's like you two try and knock me off my posh spot every week. You go and buy a massive pad with a wing in somewhere in the middle of beautiful England, and Si goes into an echoey Roman villa. I mean, for heaven's sake, I've got a blanket hanging behind me. I mean, I'm going to the slums.
Me, I'm happy if I've got a day out if I go to the bloody co-op at the minute.
I can feel it now. Well, yeah, it's not very nice, dude.
Yeah, bollocks. Yeah. I'm just... Go on, it's your line.
Once again, we're here to try and help you with life's little problems and also to solve those issues that's causing you a little bit of tiddly-woodly stress.
Why? Now remember, if you want to get in touch with the show, our email address is agonyuncles@thehairybikers.co.uk. And thanks to Craig Lester, who emailed with a question. Hello to you all. My question is... Your Hello Hairy Bikers theme jingle ditty includes the lyric, "Won't you listen to my story like a hairy, but then I can't make out the word."
Well, it's Jackanory.
Like a hairy Jackanory.
Won't you listen to my story like a hairy Jackanory?
Apparently he's an American Anglophile but can't decipher that idiom. Can you explain it to me? Google has been no help. Well, Jackanory tells stories.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Jack and Ori was a kids' TV show, wasn't it?
Yeah, I used to do the makeup on it.
Did you?
Yeah, thank you.
Top names on Jack and Ori, you know.
I know, it was mint.
Jack and Ori. It was the best one you did for Jack and Ori then.
Can't remember. Did loads of them. I mean, Jane Asher or somebody like that.
Wow.
Oh, yeah, you used to get like all of those on Jack and Ori, don't you? Reading your stories. Yeah. It was brilliant. Well, that's where he's confused, you see, because he's an American, albeit an Anglophile, which you can't get tablets for. And, and you know, so that's why. There'll be a slight cultural schism there, because Jack and Ori was a television programme that famous people came and read children's stories on.
It's like nowadays they do CBeebies Bedtime, and people like Harry Styles go on it, and I know who the American one, though, Kate and William, Princess Catherine. She went and did it as well. It's that sort of pull a celebrity in and sort of sweet talk your children into bedtime.
What about, you see, it was slightly different nowadays with me and Dave. It was, get up them stairs and get to bed. It wasn't like, you know.
Just get up there and stay there.
Yes, don't you? And make sure you brush your bloody teeth. Yeah, all right.
No reading. Yeah. But mother, I've got to read. I want to be an intelligent human being. No reading.
Come for all.
And I said, no child ever, Dave.
Yeah, where did that come from? No reading. I mean, Mummy said, I remember that. Yeah. I didn't say, well, it'll activate your brain before you go to sleep. Yeah. What? Anyway, and we've had a tweet from Janet McGee, who says she's looking forward to the new Bacon book. She says, you definitely had me at treacle and ginger scones. See, Dave, you knew that was going to be epic, didn't you?
It's all in the title, isn't it?
They sound amazing. It's on my birthday list. Well, that's quite nice.
Nice. Nice. Well, you can have another one for Christmas as well then, you know, get two, one for each eyeball. Anyway, posing the problems today, it's the thin white Duke himself, Mr. Sexy Golden Voice Mark Jeeves.
Ah, thank you, how lovely to say
so. Oh, he purrs, doesn't he?
Well, listen, it's been, I have to say, the post bag is huge and bulging, and today we do have a wide
variety of issues for you to deal with. So thank you to everyone who's got in touch with the show. Brilliant.
And she's here. The Emma Peel to our John Steed. It's posh.
Posh.
I don't know where these come from.
Emma
Peel? Emma Peel.
Emma Peel to our John Steed.
It's Diana Rigg.
It is.
Didn't Emma Peel, wasn't she a socialite that had some horrific affair? And then ran off with a nasty surgeon?
No.
Yeah. Let's go with that version.
What you're saying? I need to hold the face up a bit more. I need to run off a plastic surgeon. I didn't know another Emma Peel. I thought she was that.
It's Diana Rigg played Emma Peel
in the Avengers.
The Avengers with Patrick.
Oh, I wouldn't do that. That's a good call. Yep, fine. I'm a fine.
Oh
with that.
Yeah, no, she's very, very together. Then there was Purdy. Yeah. Lumley played her, didn't it, with a bob?
Yes. Oh yes, with a bob. Yes.
Oh, I like it. Am I going down Bond girl route now? I like this.
Yeah.
Oh, no,
yeah,
Avengers. Avengers. Not Marvel Avengers. You know, this is.
I'm more like Hulk than I am a Bond girl.
Oh, more like Diana Rigg.
Thank you.
Rigsby. Oh, no, that was somebody completely different. Anyway.
Let's solve problems before we get round to my Hulk problems.
Yes, Simon, it is problem time. So would you mind hitting the jingly poos?
Jingly pooing.
Hello, hairy bikers. Here is my request. I have got a problem that I must get off my chest. Won't you listen to my story like a hairy jackanory? Cause I heard your advice is the best.
In the Agony Uncle's perpetual pit of problems today, we have these difficulties and dilemmas for you to deal with. We have cooking on the cheap. We have the wedding photo fail. We have a fishy issue. And in confidential corner, he's a one-hit wonder. But we're going to start with cooking on the cheap. And this comes from Paul and Dean Pendleton Brown. That's very, very posh. Who say, and this is what they say, hi, posh Tash, open brackets, ladies first, close brackets. Ooh. Very nice. Oh. Uncle Dave, Uncle Si, and the kingpin, the thin white duke. I like that bit. My husband of 1 year and we have been fans of yours through all of your endeavours and have most of your books.
Thank you.
We're about to order the new baking book as well. Now, he said, I've started to ponder with the looming energy crisis, with the news that a normal Sunday lunch could cost £5 just in energy to cook. Mm-hmm. Are there recipes that minimise power usage? I know it's a bit left field of this question, but the country needs two champions of economy right now, and we hope that you can help and perhaps offer a recipe or two. The country needs you. I should point out this podcast is recorded, obviously, and some people do binge listen, so we're recording this at the end of August when this enormous energy price rise thing has been announced that kicks in the UK in October. Love to the whole team, say Paul and Dean Pendleton Brown. What are your thoughts? Over to you.
Well, it's funny, I did an interview yesterday for the weekend for the Mirror, and it was about the self same thing, that to do your roast dinner, you know, like if you're having a roast chicken and all the bits, not only have you got the cost of the chicken, it's going to cost you £5 to cook it. Mm. And that's outrageous, really, because I mean, you know, you can buy a chicken for £5, so you've doubled the cost of what your Sunday lunch is with power. And even, I mean, I grew up as did Si in a humble, you know, northern background, but yeah, sometimes we struggled to get a decent Sunday lunch, but it never crossed our mind that we wouldn't have enough gas to cook it.
Yeah,
you know, it was a question of pennies. But that figure of £5 to cook your Sunday lunch, all I think of is batch cooking, really, or buy a wok.
Or if you live near a wood, there's always, you know, it's just blown my mind. Because I remember, and I mean, Dave and I have talked about this before. Mam and I were in that perpetual circle of the gas meters, you know, putting 50p in the electric meter and the gas meter. And that was always. So when my brother and sister came over, they always used to bring like handfuls, pocketfuls of 50s to leave with me mum, so we could put them in. And particularly because the gas then was really expensive on those meters, so the poorest people were paying the most for every unit of power. So we used to have to think about it quite a lot. So Mam used to do regularly, as Dave well knows, a Sunday lunch, and it was always great. But you always had to think about a 50p. You always have to think about putting 50p's in the electric and gas meter. And it's just, and there really is no other way to get around it. It's just, it's so hard.
Is there something in, I'm just thinking the practicalities of cooking, and I'm honestly not talking, I'm asking you more than I'm telling you. Is it, some people put in the chicken and they think, well, 40 minutes later, we'll put in the potatoes, a little bit later, we'll do this. Is there something about a one-pot wonder? I know you guys do them.
Yeah.
You roast in one way and you just do 40 minutes, quick cook, or an hour, quick cook, and then you're going to use one slot of energy.
Yeah, I mean, you could almost do, and I think we wrote a recipe for a Sunday lunch tray bake.
Yeah,
whereas everything goes on a tray bake, and because the chicken's jointed, you know, or cut down to pieces, it will cook quicker. But what I would say is that if you're, you know, seriously thinking about this, it's batch cooking really, and freezing, because a freezer, I'm assuming that doesn't cost so much power to run as your oven. But say things like if you're doing a chicken chasseur with mushrooms, but just do two or three chickens, cook it on the stove top, and then freeze it. And then you've got, you know, your Sunday lunch, something special, which is just like a reheat, really.
Would you say that when you get it out of the freezer, then are you suggesting you reheat it just in a microwave? If your chicken's already cooked, how would you then reheat?
You could do it, or just put it on the stove top on in a pan, you know.
Oh right, okay.
And maybe put some roast potatoes on, and you know, but there again, or what do? You end up buying part cooked roast potatoes in the freezer, and you know, there comes a fine point where, you know, you end up having more processed food to save the energy that you would be using to do home cooking. And, you know, and home cooking is so important, I think, to us, because it's what we've been advocating for years. And all of a sudden, you know, the actual cost of fuel to cook really hasn't been an issue.
Mm. No.
You've got an Argo, Dave, haven't you? Is an Argo extortionately expensive or extortionately... Is it better? Because it's always on, isn't it, Naga? It never stops.
Yes, we had this conversation last night with the person who sold us the house. And it's a big five oven Naga, worthy of, you know...
A ship.
I think it's going to be a bit of a swine, really.
Yeah.
But it is nice. I get the Naga, you know, in terms of... But it's on all the time. So, yeah, exactly. I mean, I don't know how much my Sunday roast is costing, because there's nothing in there now and it's banging away.
Equally, it heats the kitchen and you haven't got the radiators or anything else on, surely.
Oh, yeah, it's been 40 degrees recently. It's been great, Tash. You know, oh, it's been like a sauna in there. I've got the windows open. Even the dog's hanging out the window. And everybody said, oh, you'll be glad of it in the winter.
He says, doing Bikram yoga and sweating from every
orange. Yeah. But no, so really what you could do actually is come round to our house, do all your batch cooking on the cheap, because I've got no option but for pay for it, then you can freeze it, it'll cost you nothing.
That's the thing, you do realise now that there's going to be a massive queue as everybody's just standing on Dave's steps.
Yeah, but you could check the food on the way in, like a nightclub. You're not coming in, that's rubbish. Yeah. Oh, I'm not cooking that. No, out. Yeah, that's not going in my arga.
Well, I said the man who wanted fish finger sandwiches the other day. What would you clarify as you're not coming
this in? This man had the fish finger sandwiches as well.
Did you?
Oh, yes. I actually, a little touch of class, I found it. And it was harissa ketchup.
Ooh.
I've got. And that was really nice. Just some nice sourdough bread, a couple of fish fingers, slightly squashed with harissa ketchup.
Ooh. Nice.
They were posh fish fingers, though. They weren't, you know, economy.
Yeah, I'm starving.
I was going to say, the alternative is, if you want to be, not have to cook, is it surely salad's not the option? It's a Sunday salad, isn't it, through winter? It's the only way to do it, isn't it?
Well,
you'd just want to kill yourself, though, wouldn't you? Yeah. You know, a salad through winter, you've got to be kidding us.
I think what stings as well, it's everybody is capable of doing an alternative Sunday roast or a Sunday meal that again is quick and easy. You know, even if you have like a late brunch of your sausage, bacon, egg and all the trimmings. But I think it's a sense of occasion and it's a sense of tradition that we've all loved and grown up with. And I think it's still an important part of family life.
And I think and it's just that erosion and chipping away at little elements of our culture that actually bind us together, and it's just so bad. They really do need to do something and do something quickly.
I was going to say it's the warmth. I think it's, you know, it's a bit cheesy, isn't it? But look, cooking a roast on a Sunday, I think it's in my idealistic mind, admittedly, but that family comes together in one room, someone's peeling the potatoes, the smell's going, someone's laying the table, there's the heart of the family, that warmth of a family is about to be ruined by not being able to keep warm and keep your heating on and cook your food. And that's the thing that's so sad at the bottom of it all.
It's absolutely
it's real basics. I think, are we something like fifth in the world economy or something like that?
Yeah.
And the fact is we choose to have food banks is outrageous.
Yeah.
You know, it's...
And that and the disparity between those that have and those that have not are just getting, I mean, it's getting ridiculous. It's ridiculous.
Yes.
Mm. You know, child poverty is just it's just in a state. The country's in a terrible state. It's very, very, very distressing for anybody that cares about other human beings. It's bloody awful.
We care.
Yes, we do.
Yes. So yes, batch cooking, really. Or what you could do if you wanted to change your lifestyle completely is buy an induction hob for a wok. They're like an oval shape, and the wok fits in. You can buy second-hand catering ones really cheap, and they work really hot. And I always remember, Kingy, do you remember when we were in Hong Kong in that apartment, and there was the grandma?
Yes.
She had a wok, a chopper, and a chopping board.
And that was
and within 25 minutes, she produced a banquet.
Wow.
Amazing, isn't it? Yeah.
Yes, yeah, it was. The wok, the chopper, and the chopping board.
Well, that's an option.
So remember, any recipe that we talk about on the podcast, you can find at thehairybikers.com. It'll be on there for you.
Food makes everything better.
Okay, our next issue is called The Wedding Photo Fail. We need one single male name. Who could I turn to for this?
No. It's a male name. We're going to go for Patrick.
Nice.
How very SpongeBob. I was just about to say that. His friends are spongy.
Classy boys, they are.
Okay, well, here we go. This is from Patrick then. It says, hello, Si, Dave, Posh, Tash and the Duke. I'm in a terrible spot and I don't know what to do. I like photography. I've got some decent kit and my mates all know that it's my passion, though it's just a hobby. At the beginning of August, I agreed to photograph my mate's wedding. He and his wife had some very definite ideas about the sort of photos they wanted and they weren't happy with some of the other photographers that they spoke with, so they asked me to do it. I was a bit nervous, but I agreed. The wedding was huge, they spent a fortune on it, and during the day we did manage to get all the photos they wanted, some of them quite arty, but I was looking forward to editing them on my computer. We took about 300 photos in all. I had them stored on a memory card, which I kept in a drawer for safety, ready for editing the weekend after. One night in the week, I had a kitchen disaster, which I thought nothing of. I'd knocked over a frying pan of hot olive oil I was cooking in and it spilled, luckily not on me, and I cleared up the mess on the worktop. I didn't even consider some of it might have gone into my kitchen drawer, but it had. Onto the memory card, and it was melted into a right angle. It's completely unusable. I keep getting messages from my mate, asking when they can see the photos as they're so excited about them. What on earth can I do? Asks Patrick, over to you.
I emigrate, really. It's impossible. Yeah, just do a runner. Yeah. There's no coming back. It's a bit like, it's one of those things, isn't it, that you should never agree to, like teaching your partner how to drive.
Oh.
Do you know what I mean? It's like, yeah. I was a makeup artist for 23 years. Would I make Lil up? Would I, heck? She gave me so much grief, it's not worth it. But like, to take on the responsibility of somebody's wedding, oh, no, without doing a backup immediately.
Mm. No, and what kitchen drawer? I mean, I appreciate you might have an office, but kitchen drawer, dangerous anyway. You know, anything drips through it. Just tell me, Simon, were you thinking the same? Because as Dave said, emigrate, in my head was screaming the word run. So tell me
yes,
you were thinking the same.
I was absolutely thinking the same thing. There is nowhere to go other than to put your hands up, say, I've properly ruined the memories of your day.
Mm.
And I'd just leave, just move, do anything. Just, oh,
no. You can always ask her if you still got the hat and if you'd have, like, you know, a few of the close members of the family together and do a reshoot. You know, pretend it's, you know, scowling bride.
What he set up is he should dress little vegetables up in his kitchen, all in little wedding outfits, and take them and go the reenactment photos.
Has anybody ever told you you're really quite warped, Tash?
That could be seen as rubbing salt in the wound, or Tash. Yes. Yes.
Or in your vegetable. Yes. I mean, I did.
The bride's mother's a courgette. Yes.
What would the husband be, though? What would you have him as?
Marrow.
Ooh, a proud
marrow.
Yeah.
Marrow.
Yeah.
Oh, no way, man. Why? What? what Burke, sorry Patrick, but puts something so important into that kitchen drawer?
Yeah.
But you need I don't get it, man. Yeah, dude, yeah.
And it, surely it's his hobby, photography. He must have places he keeps his photography stuff, opposed to just the kitchen drawer. There must be somewhere else.
Well,
maybe that's the title. It's a hobby. It's not a profession.
Mm.
Yeah. Having said that, we did have a runner once when we were filming. The runner is not, it's not a disparaging term in the industry. It's a, it's a like entry level to the industry. But he actually left all the film rushes, that is like our memory sticks, as it were, in a kebab house in Carcassonne.
Oh, my God.
And I always remember our director, who's French, his language was very colourful.
Right.
Oh, yes. It was multilingual, like, you know.
It was a worldwide one language, one word spiel, I can imagine.
Yes.
Yeah, oh, you could you imagine? Oh, yes.
Oh, aye.
What did you do? Did you get him back?
Yeah, you did, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Right.
But he was the type of young man who wouldn't apologise, so...
Oh, right.
Oh, it was... But leaving all that in a... Actually, we did again, actually, with photography. When we did Food Tour of Britain all those years ago, do you remember in St. George's Market in Belfast?
Yes, yes,
there
I
was
do.
The runner there, a young lady, and she had the camera with all the stills on, and she left that in the toilet at St. George's Market, Belfast. And when she came back, the camera wasn't there, funnily enough.
Wow.
So we lost all the stills.
And did they ever come to light? They didn't appear in the media anywhere. Didn't go on
No.
I've got a solution, I'm thinking. I'm thinking practically now. What if he tries... He's a friend. He wasn't hired. So it would be easier if he was hired a professional. They'd sue him, business, insurance, etc. It's not. It's a friend. So he needs to do the kindest thing he can do. He's got to admit it at some point and apologise. Before he does that, he calls around all the wedding guests because he must know a lot of them. And he gets all their photos that they must have taken on their phones. There's going to be evidence of the day everywhere else. He gathers their photos and he creates the most incredible montage of everyone's photos to give to them and say, I'm sorry, I messed up, but here's the memories of everyone else's day. Is that not a clever way of doing it?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. It's not the same.
No, but it's something.
So hard, isn't it?
Oh, Patrick.
Run.
Yeah, that's it. I think that's a good solution, though, Tash, because everybody's got their phones and are addicted to them. It's an extension.
Yeah, you've either emigrate, run to the hills, or else you have to face up to it and just eat so much humble pie. But there again, you know, only eat enough, because once you apologise once, he obviously is devastated.
Yeah.
You know, it's not going to bring the pictures back, is it?
No.
But he's also must be feeling bad. He didn't mean to.
No.
Got to be forgiveness in there somewhere. And they'll have the memories in their head and they've got the rest of their life to be married. They might be divorced in 2 years and not want the photos anyway.
It's true, really. We've all got those albums, haven't we, Simon?
Yes, David, we have.
This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
If you got problems, you'll be fine. Just drop the agony uncles a line.
Your next problem is a fishy issue, and it comes from Annette, who says, hello, is there some sort of etiquette for eating lobster? As I made a bit of a tit of myself during a recent visit to a posh seafood restaurant in Mallorca. My son loves seafood, and I don't. But as he was paying, I decided to appease him. He persuaded me to order lobster paella. And when it came along, we were presented with a huge platter of delicious food and a tool belt consisting of a wrench and some sort of knitting needle. I asked the waiter what I should do with the tools, as I wasn't suitably dressed to go and fix the toilet. He just raised an eyebrow and walked off. After wrestling with the lobster, I thought I'd help myself to a little more paella, at which point the waiter hurled over the chairs to serve me. Again, another raised eyebrow. Despite this, the food was delicious and I've been converted to seafood, but I'm still unsure how to access all areas of lobster. Any tips are most welcome. P.S. I love the hacks on onions and rocket leaves at the recent Southport Flower Show Food Village exhibition. From Annette, over to you.
Lobster's not a bad one, is it? I mean, it's not as bad as a crab.
No, crab's tricky.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that requires investment in time, doesn't it, and fortitude.
Yes.
But lobster, it's really pretty straightforward, isn't it? Just some of the parts.
Yeah, it's just, you know.
Do you remember, though, that we were in that pub in Notting Hill when we were starting the bikers out with our new producer-director, and you cheekily ordered a lobster, and you basically, it was like a Mormon baptism. You got the producer head to foot with lobster juice, literally, from the top of his head to his balls was just covered in lobster. I thought we've blown this one, Kingy.
Little flippy white bits, you know, that kind of come off.
Oh, yeah.
And at the end, when he said, "Would you?" Oh, so sorry, dude. Can I have another Guinness?
Lobster dandruff.
Oh, it was exactly that. No, look, you know, the thing is that if the restaurant's that good, they should make it as easy for you at table as possible, hence all the tools. I would suggest that you persevere. Buy your own lobster in the comfort of your own home. I mean, you know, if you've got the energy isn't too much to cook it, but do that, and then and practice. You can get little, you know, seafood tool belt kits and picks and stuff on Tinternet.
I've got a set of solid silver lobster picks, actually.
Oh, charming! Yes,
I got beautiful. Given them for Christmas. Yeah,
and have you used them?
Not a crab. But they've got like a pick at one end, but then they've got like a very narrow spoon at the other, so you can just get that. Yeah, it is lovely.
They're lovely.
But the lobster bits, you get the tail off, don't you? Crack it into two.
Yeah.
Eat that. And then the restaurant should start and break the claws.
Yeah.
But then if you're Simon King, you suck the head.
Definitely.
Oh, don't you? Do you?
Yeah, man, it's great.
Oh, it's a head sucker.
I am. If you stand still long enough and you're a bio valve or anything, some sort of crustacean, that's it.
Yuck. They do say, though, the eye, I know it's not a shellfish, sorry, stuttering, but is not the eye, apparently, on a fish, the most delicious part?
Oh, I never heard that one.
No, neither have I.
I thought the eye and the cheek were the best bits.
Well, it depends if they've got them.
Oh, I thought all fish had cheeks.
You know,
fish cheeks?
Yeah. Cod cheeks. Yeah, trying to think. Yeah.
Oh, it wasn't the reaction I was thinking. I thought you were both going to go, yes, that's the delicacy. That's the best bit. Well, clearly, I've been sold a yarn.
I'll tell you what. You know what? You've been sold a right rum in there. You've been going. Oh, yes, I'll have that. Postache has been rumbled.
It's that's why oxtail became so dear, didn't it, really?
Yeah.
It's a wonderful cut oxtail. Yeah, but it's meant to cost nothing, and now it costs a fortune.
Yeah, I remember that there was this place that Dave and I walked past, and I know where it was. It was in Hampstead. It was a quite famous butcher's in Hampstead. There was this piece of belly pork, and it was £48.
Mm.
Right now, I'd bought exactly the same bit of belly pork up in the northeast for £8. So there was a £40 disparity between, because it's cheap, you know. It's the belly. And it was shocking. It was shocking.
I was in the most beautiful fish restaurant in Portugal recently, just outside Cascais, and it was stunning. And the fish is there; you can pick your fish, and it's all done on per kilogram. It was lovely. But there was this lobster that was in the fish tank as you walked in. That every so often, when someone would fish out, someone on the menu had obviously gone, "I'd like to look at the lobster, please," and working out the kilogram of it. And the lobster would come out and come to the table with claws there, sort of looking at the table, and then it would get a little stroke, and then someone would go, "No, thank you." And this lobster must have come out about 10, 15 times through the night, and everyone turned it down. So I didn't actually know what the price was per kilogram. But this poor lobster was like a pet. Everyone was stroking it, and then they go, "I don't want him." And he went back in the water.
Oh. Can you imagine psychologically what that poor lobster's going through?
Oh, awful.
Am I in the pan? Am I not? Am I in the pan? Am I not?
It's like death row with all the appeals, isn't it?
It is, isn't it?
Just give me the blooming injection. Enough's enough now. Yes. I fancy lobster, all this talk.
I'll bring some down when I come, dude. I've got that what do you call those? But yeah, Yetis, the brilliant. Anyway, it's a cool box.
Uh-huh.
They're epic. I drove to Italy, as you all know, not so long ago, and you put the ice packs in, and it was literally stayed cold for 4 days. It was mad, because I was expecting, oh, this is going to be a bit of a mess when I opened it up, And it was brilliant. So I'll bring some stuff down from the northeast, dude.
Yeah, because remember the last time you brought some stuff down from the northeast, you poisoned me. Well, that was mussels in your saddlebag on a summer's day, wasn't it, really?
Oh, now he's got a Yeti.
Oh, now he's got a Yeti. Yeah, things have come on a bit.
I'd
just put my Yeti in my Audi.
Yes, please. Would you mind?
Just tell me quick, you guys, what part of the lobster goes into a lobster bisque?
Shells. Well, the stock.
The stock.
It's the stock.
Yeah, it's lobster biscuits. They stock in the head juice. Meat. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, just give it a good crush when you're boiling it down with your aromats.
Oh.
Do the same with langoustine, lobster, whatever.
Oh, I'm starved.
Yeah, I'm too now. Well, you're all right. You're in Rome.
I know. Yeah. Well, but you know, I've got to get out in it. That's the thing. I'm trying to think. Ooh, where can I go? Where can I go? Where can I go? Ooh.
Fish restaurant.
I'm going to go for it. Fish restaurant. Well, if they don't stop, I tell you what, actually, this is a point. If they don't stop putting all of that raw sewage into our waters, it's probably not a good idea, really, is it, to eat anything? Absolutely shocking.
You should go to La Pergola, Kingy.
Again, I kind of go again, dude. I'm still paying off the last one.
Yes, it's true, actually. Abandoned hope all year winter, but it's worth it.
Oh, so
La Pergola, 3 Michelin stars in Rome for that special occasion.
It was canny special.
Oh, it was amazing, isn't it? Mind you, I've got to admit, at the same time we weren't for lunch that day, we went to this place which near the Colosseum, which looked like the worst tripper trap ever. You know, for tourists, except you were sitting out there looking at Colosseum. And we had the cacio e pepe, excuse pronunciation, you know, the Roman dish with pecorino cheese and black pepper and vongolese, just pasta. It was absolutely stunning.
Wow.
There's no other words for it. It wasn't tripper trap at all. Oh. It was just like, oh, I don't want this to end, you know. So, and you know, just go for a pizza, man.
Yeah, man.
Roman pizza.
Well, I think that the restaurant that you're actually talking about is called Alfredo al Parthenon, which is right next to the Parthenon. And
Parthenon? Not the Parthenon. You're not in Greece.
No, I'm not in Greece, am I? No.
The Colosseum.
The Colosseum is what I'm trying to say.
And look behind you, Si, there's the Eiffel Tower.
Yeah, that's it.
And look.
Yeah, where have I been? Where am I?
Well, if you're down.
Hey, if you're down.
Now don't get drunk.
Don't get drunk.
Just send an email.
Just send an email.
To the Agony Uncles.
To the Agony Uncles.
It's time to head to Confidential Corner, which today is called He's a One-Hit Wonder. We need one lady's name and one male name, but the male name needs to be slightly showbiz. I shall explain. So, Si, lady's name, Dave, showbiz male name, please.
Ricky.
Ricky.
Rose.
Ricky and Rose. Dear Uncle Si and Uncle Dave, this comes from Rose. I need a great excuse not to invite my brother Ricky to my 60th birthday party. Please help. I won't name him. Well, we have Ricky. But my brother had a very minor chart hit in 1981. He swears blind that on his one and only Top of the Pops performance, his makeup was done by you, Dave. Anyway, his record went to number 37 in the chart. Then he was on Top of the Pops, and the following week it went down to number 41. Then he was dropped by the record company. But despite this, he still behaves like he was Simon Le Bon or Paul Young, and it drives me mad. I want to be clear at this point that the person in question is not Simon Le Bon or Paul Young. Within 3 seconds of meeting, he'll tell you that you'll probably recognise me from Top of the Pops. He also has had odd media jobs, like answering the phones on Swap Shop, but he had to leave that too as he kept gurning at the camera whenever it accidentally pointed at him. But because of this job, he'll tell you that he's a close personal friend of Noel Edmonds. He's always taking something innocuous, like when he saw Kim Wilde at Liverpool Lime Street once and turning it into a serious showbiz story of their friendship, and it drives me and my family mad. Ultimately, he's harmless, and I feel rotten that I'm even thinking this. But I know that it'll be just cringeworthy at my 60th birthday party. What should I do? Asks Rose. And what I want to know is, can Dave identify this person?
Well, I'm trying to think, really.
What should Rose do?
Did you do Top of the Pops in 1981? Does that fit? Or?
Yeah, it does, actually. Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
I think what she does, you see, give him something to do. So tell him to please hit and bugger off. You know, so get up, get him on stage, give him his moment, and then get rid.
It's quite sad, really, isn't it? He's obviously living that one moment that defined his life, and it never materialised. It's like us, really. You know, you get two series, and then they bin you, or they don't bin you.
Yeah.
And we nearly got binned, didn't we? But we didn't. We survived.
Who'd bin you two? Never.
Well, the commissioner of the BBC, to be fair.
You still have contacts in your other jobs. Me and Dave were like, no.
No.
Panic. I think she should tell all the other guests to overindulge him and catch him out. So, like, everyone else is in on it. So they're going to look at you the nightmare. Yeah. He's going to tell you, and they've all got a stock answer or a silly answer to give him, or make him feel, I don't know. They've all got to be in, and he's got to be out.
Yeah, that's a good idea, actually. Yeah, because you could say, oh, well, actually, and you could just do one-upmanship with him all the time.
Exactly.
So everybody in the room has got a relationship with
him.
Yeah.
You know.
Or, well, alternatively, go and invite someone far more famous than he's ever been to come to the party, and her to go, oh, didn't you know we were best friends? I never told you.
What you need is Kim Wilde to turn up.
Oh. Yeah.
And then she's got to front him with his lies.
Yes. I like that.
No. Oh.
I know. But there's always someone out there. Do you know what? I mean, there are people who haven't been as lucky, let's say, as you two, and worked as hard and got it. But there's always people out there fighting in the industry, actors and dancers, that want to be out. Everyone goes into it to want to be the best entertainer or whatever. And there are so many, many, many that don't make it, sadly, who may be brilliant too. And they, you know, and the ones that have failed, who wish they were, but now are the local postman. You know, I just think they do need to tell their story, because that was their glory moment. They always wished to go on forever. He wished he was Simon Le Bon, and he's trying his hardest to sound amazing.
Hmm.
I feel a bit sorry for him, really.
Yeah, I think I do, but I know how irritating it is, because it drives, you know.
But the thing is, that for that brief week, he'll have been so buffed up, and ego will be so massaged by everybody that, you know, well, I just suppose. You ought to come down to earth, haven't you, in about 30 years. You should have tweaked by now.
I have to say, the names aren't big name drops anymore, really, are they? The Top of the Pops. Some people even know what Top of the Pops is.
Yeah, that is true. It absolutely blew my mind. And I was talking to one of the younger members of our society, who was 16. And I went, oh, yeah, well, I was in Top of the Pops, man. It was great. And they went, what's that?
Yeah.
Ooh. I was So I got onto the tube that is you and showed them. And they were like, why haven't we got this anymore? Oh. It's great.
Well, we haven't really had Top of the Pop since the 1980s, have we, really?
Not really. Well, because the whole industry changed, didn't it? You know, everybody used to get really excited about what was number one. Number one was
everybody
announced
knew.
On a Friday. It was like, whoa, what's happening? Who's number one?
It wasn't Ricky.
No, definitely not. He was the Dizzy Heights of 37. That's what we're
new in this week, Ricky. Yeah.
Do you think
sliding this week, Ricky?
Do you think Dave is going around now though, going, yeah, I have a, you know the Hairy Bikers, Dave. You know Dave, I'm good friends with him. He did my makeup. He's name dropping you.
Oh, I don't know.
Not well, he really. Is clearly. He mentioned it. Yeah,
he
name drops Dave. Yeah.
Could have been me, really. Because I was so junior then, I got the ones who were just in the 30s. I did actually. I used to volunteer for, when I was on my own, the Christmas and Christmas Eve ones.
Oh.
And they were good parties, actually. Because you would have like three back-to-back, the Christmas Eve one, Christmas Day one, and the New Year's Day one. And they'd be recorded over 3 days. So, by God, that was some party, really.
Yeah,
it was fun, yeah. And then obviously the New Year one, you had everybody that had been number one.
Oh, wow. Big star.
Brilliant.
Yeah, it was. It was good. It was good. I remember there was that much glitter going around. We all ended up with nosebleeds. And it was glitter. It wasn't anything nefarious, because we didn't know what the nefarious things were. But it was all the glitter. And honestly, when you blew your nose, it was just spangled. That's your business.
That's your business. I bet Ricky never did that. He didn't blow his nose on glitter. No.
No, I blew my nose on glitter. Me and Jennifer Rush.
Oh.
Power of
love.
No, I used to make her up every week. She was number one.
Wow. I think she was there for ages, wasn't she?
Yeah. The power of love comes on from above.
What?
Or something like that.
Was she nice?
She was absolutely delightful, yes.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
Oh, that's good to know.
Yeah. Elton John, he wouldn't take his hat off when I was making him up.
What?
So it's very hard to blend a foundation under a brim, Elton. Not taking it off. All right, then.
Really?
Yeah, well, I don't know. There must be something going on underneath his Stetson. But no, he wouldn't take his hat off. Oh, those were the days.
Aww.
Teardrop explodes. Oh, hiding boils on Mark Allman's neck. That was another one.
Oh. So glamorous.
I've been there.
Did you ever have adamant stripe across his nose?
I come close, yes, yeah. Because what they do is, a lot of them would come their own makeup because of unions. We had to check them.
Oh.
So they would come in and see us, be it Toya Wilcox or adamant. And you just do something to justify your existence, you know. It's the same with the royal family. You had to go and check the royal family if they're on something like it's ridiculous. If it was a royal command performance, you'd be sent up to the royal box in a dinner suit to check mom's makeup.
No.
No.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, you look lovely.
Job done. Off you go.
What are you going to say to the cook?
Yeah.
Excuse me. You've smudged your lippy. No.
Aye. Now, come on, mother, you can do better than that. I should have actually, it's a royal command performance. And it's like the dancers, they're changing that, all the lady dancers, and they just forget you're a bloke, you know, and it's like, you know, you're completely wallpaper.
Right.
You know, I'm just semi jeans and that, and the dancers are changing. You thought, well, it's fine, it's part of the job, you know. But what was funny was when we did the changes, I was wearing my dinner suit because I'd just come down from the royal box, and none of the dancers could cope with that because all of a sudden I was a man.
Ah.
Yes.
I was
virile, yes. I thought, I'm going to keep this suit.
Keep this suit and me pie whacking T-shirt. Yes.
Yeah.
I was about to bring the pie whacking up. They didn't know what was hiding under there.
I tell you what, so did Dave, clearly.
Ah, you don't know this. This is Pie Wacket you're talking to. You know, I'm not Mr. Invisible.
All right.
Bye. So Ricky.
Advice for Ricky, then. Let's go around the table. And Uncle Dave.
Well, Ricky, you've got to get a grip, haven't you, really? That then was then and now's now. And just have a laugh with it, really. At least you got there for a brief period of time.
Exactly, Uncle Si.
Shut your face and drink more.
And posh dash.
Well, I'm thinking Rose now, having written into our podcast, has got a story far better than Ricky. You can say now, guess whose podcast I was on?
Yes.
Merry Bikers.
Boom. Yeah, we forget about that. We are famous, aren't we? Yeah.
He's far more famous than he is now.
In our own shoes.
If your life's in a mess, then the email address is theagonyuncles@thehairybikes.co. UK.
Yeah. Do you know, you're such a lovely bunch of listeners, and thank you so much for contacting the show and sending us your problems. We really love hearing from you.
We'll have another episode of The Agony Uncles next week, of course, but only if you keep sending us your troubles and woes, and send them to agonyuncles@thehairybikers.co.uk. agonyuncles@thehairybikers.co.uk.
Remember, you can also see this podcast as well as hear it. Just search for Hairy Bikers Agony Uncles on YouTube, and there we will be.
We will. So from Posh Tash.
Bye.
The Thin White Duke.
Goodbye.
And us.
Bye-bye.
Have a great week.
Ta-da.
Hi, my name is Kay Adams, and to be honest, I'm not so good with the ageing process, so I enlisted my old chum, the filter-free Cara McKenzie, to advise.
Could you imagine being a porn star? The room would need to be really hot for me to strip off.
To be honest, she's not much help, but she is rather amusing. And along with some great guests, Joe Brand, Andy Oliver, Anton Dubek, Ruth Langsford, and Craig Revel Horwood, darling, we are learning how to be 60. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.